Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ripple of Change podcast, searching for our quadruple aim, where we celebrate, highlight, and extol others doing amazing things in healthcare and beyond. Again, I'm Dr. Todd R. Otten, Dr. Rotten in some circles, I suppose. Today, I have two amazing people with me who I consider to be friends as well. Bryce Bowers, family medicine resident, also blogger, podcaster. Check out The Badge of Burnout. Fantastic stuff. And Christina or Tina Nomad Higgins, a subconscious biohacker. I'm just intrigued by that in and of itself. So without any further ado, I'm going to toss it over to Bryce, who's going to start us off.
All right. Hi, Tina. How are you?
Hey, Bryce. Nice to meet you today.
Nice to meet you. Todd, thanks for having us both. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm gonna jump right in. So the subconscious biohacker, just like what Todd said, that like it's such a great. I mean, your marketing, I can already tell you're brilliant because your marketing is just it's spot on. You know, it's like as soon as I saw that yesterday, I'm like, huh. Well, now I gotta click. Now I gotta look into this a little bit more. You know, because that's just the you know the curious mind we have. So, Tina, I've never met you before. I've kind of reviewed some of your work and that sort of stuff, but like. Can you just give us like an overview? Give me at least an overview because I'm very curious about what you do.
Yeah, so I guess I compare my job more to a computer upgrader or reprogrammer than anything else. And I specialize in helping people to upgrade their subconscious programming, I feel, which is pretty much the most untapped and powerful resource that we have as it controls the mind, the body, everything. The subconscious is in charge of everything. And in my personal and professional opinion, we should be doing a whole lot more research in that field than the AMA and the BMA have already done. But my background started in psychology, but like many people, I was a little frustrated with the amount of time that the average functioning person, above average functioning person was spending, you know, trying to resolve things from their past, let's say. And so that's when I started to really, when I was living in Japan, really research the subconscious. And I'm like, well, all our programming is at the subconscious level. So why aren't we just going straight there and making the changes there medically, emotionally, and so on. And so that's when I started to study, you know, I moved back to the US. I went to the best hypnotherapy schools I could find, studied clinical hypnotherapy, neuro-linguistic programming. And then I found my mentor, who's just kind of another level genius with the subconscious, who does some techniques called inner mind sourcing. And this really allows me to with people's permission, to help give their subconscious an upgrade, remove the limiting programming, and instill the new stuff that they want, like any piece of technology. And the results speak for themselves. I mean, I would say between 1 and 6 sessions for almost any issue that anyone throws at me, anxiety, depression, fears, traumas, phobias, addictions, weight loss, medical issues, lots of medical issues, and so on. Standardly between 1 and 6 sessions for most standard issues to be resolved. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting field to be in for me, and just looking to get more and more reach so that people can tap into their potential more on a global level. If that answers your question.
Yeah, that does. That's perfect. Yeah. And I think that's very interesting. I'll be honest, you know, I'm a physician. I treat a lot of anxiety, depression, those sorts of things, but this really isn't like the first go-to thing, right? That's not part of my training, but I'm always open to like learning about new things for my patients because it's so hard to treat. So I work in like, you know, and a lot of my outside work is in the physician wellness and physician mental health, because that's just something I'm extremely passionate about, right? Now let me ask you first, are any of your clients, and you don't obviously have to say names, but do you work with like healthcare workers, physicians at all?
I get referred by physicians, psychologists, psychiatrists quite a bit, because there's a lot of things that I can do faster than they can do. And I work with that field, as in, you know, treating them as well, working with them. I wouldn't say treating because I'm not a medical professional and I don't put myself as that way. But, you know, I mean, I'll just use myself as a brief example for the medical issues, but I've got clients as well. I grew up with a history of migraine since I was a child, you know, since at least third grade, I can remember, you know, severe, you know, throwing up the whole thing and being hospitalized all the time. allergies since I was a teen. I was on 2 to 3 medications a day, nasal and the 2 other medications to be able to keep it under control. Acid reflux, as I became an adult, I was on at least 2 medications a day in order to keep that. I couldn't go off or it was, yeah. Anyways, but by reprogramming the subconscious, you know, I don't need any daily medication anymore. You know, I take things as needed, but I was able to take myself off, as well as I had these internal spasms with the basal reflex, and I would pass out. And so, yeah, with just telling the subconscious what you want it to upgrade, and you don't have to be a medical professional, it controls it all. It knows what adjustments to make, and it does it for us. And so, yeah, like I said, as in the most highly untapped resource that we have, in my opinion, this should be used in the medical world and the therapy world so much more. I mean, the studies that the AMA has done and the American Medical Association and the British Medical Association are pretty outstanding. As far as hospitals are concerned, it saves them so much money. I'll use just one example for a mastectomy. So if the patient has one session, let's say even just of hypnotherapy coming in, they need way less anesthesia than another client because they naturally drop to the level. So of course that's healthier for the surgery. And then when they come out, they have less side effects, they have less pain. So they need less medication afterwards, and they leave the hospital an average of a day and a half earlier than any other patient. And so obviously this is better for the well-being of the patient, and it saves the hospital's money because now you're clearing the beds faster. And so that's just one example, but there are so many examples. And again, you know, I really wish that they would be teaching this because it's such a good thing to be in conjunction with, you know, especially in your family medicine, you know, to be able to have the resource of the subconscious combined with, you know, treating symptoms and things. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, no worries. I only had like 75 questions at this point, Tina, maybe 76. This is so good, though. But actually, one of the things I really want to know, I'm going to bounce to Bryce, because when I was in school and training, and my gray hairs probably give this away a little bit, we didn't really go over this at all. And the mind is such a powerful tool.
I studied psychology, and I don't remember going over this.
Yeah, and it's a whole degree.
Yeah,
it's fascinating, right? And like having had some struggles and peeling back some layers of some of the trauma I had as a child recently, I was like, holy smokes, this explains so much of my defense mechanisms that I've never really gotten into before. And absolutely. I think it explains a lot of the recurrent dreams I've had over the years. And
absolutely.
And interesting, those are starting to evolve in the recent past. So I guess my question, Bryce, is this being taught at all, you know, at your stage of the game?
No, not in the least bit. You know, I have my own qualms about medical training and what is instilled in it. Oh, what isn't, right?
We might need a whole nother episode.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really don't think so. You know, I think it may be bits and pieces. It is, you know, at my program specifically, we're very conscientious of how the mind affects the body. And that's just kind of how we operate. And I think that's really important. But, you know, I'm not too far removed from medical school. I graduated 5 years ago, but it's more ground and pound hard sciences, you know what I mean? And that's kind of all we did. And, yeah. And it's very difficult to convince administrators and otherwise that we should be putting this sort of stuff in the curriculum, even though there may be some extremely good evidence for it. Right. So
yeah,
there's definitely some barriers. Tina, can you talk about some of like what you would perceive as like, even in like to do it in a hospital, right? Like to convince hospital administrators, because it's all about kind of the bottom line nowadays, right? Like, How could we figure out a way to incorporate this into medical education and those sorts of things?
Well, I mean, you know, it's once to make big moves like that, you know, I think some big names kind of have to be tied to it, right? So if some larger named physicians, researchers, and so on were like, you know, hey, you know, this really works. I've worked with hospital administrators on multiple occasions who've just had, you know, massive success working with me. You know, and I think it kind of comes from that because the evidence is there. But, you know, I think what happens is that people just, you know, you've got the program. Why not just keep using that? I mean, I feel like mine was pretty, you know, outdated as well. you know, not that it's, you know, I don't want to say outdated to like, you know, trash on the universities and hospitals, but, you know, everything's in motion and it's like to make, you know, big changes, but I really don't think that there's such big changes. We're talking adding some courses in, we're talking employing into the hospitals, you know, by actually employing, you know, it could be somebody like me, a subconscious biohacker, or a clinical hypnotherapist that's trained specifically. And the beauty of what I do is you can do it all virtually. I mean, I work with patients when they're in the hospital in their beds, you know, and, you know, because it can be, their eyes are closed anyways. I don't have to be sitting there in front of them. And so it's not like you have to like have actual people, you know, there, though it's helpful in traumatic situations. I worked with burn victims and things before the medication, you know, was able to come in to be able to drop them down and to deal with the pain before they were able to get, you know, the emergency medication on site. So there is that application, but I think otherwise, you know, the ability to do virtual at this point makes it such an easy implementation that there's just really no reason. And it wouldn't be super like caught. The studies have already been done. It saves the hospitals money, bottom line. And most hospitals, you know, operating red, black, whatever, you know, all the things, you know, and so in that you want to actually show from a financial standpoint what it's going to do for them. And, you know, for me, for doctors, I mean, it's a no-brainer if, you know, you actually want, you know, I mean, it's, do you want to put band-aids on something or do we want actual healing, you know? And it's not a diss to doctors, because again, they don't know, but you know, what if we could instill the body's natural healing abilities, and it has it, you know, the evidence is there. It has the capability to actually do things. I mean, you know, I'm reading this book right now called The Holographic Universe, and I find it, especially the first few chapters, are very interesting because it has these medical examples as well as psychological examples. And one of the psychological examples, I don't know if you're familiar with the multiple personality disorder. So how are you familiar with the multiple personality disorder when one personality has, let's say, diabetes, or a severe allergy to peanuts that they can die from? Or, and now let's say that they're in that reaction and they switch personalities, what happens? The entire thing switches off, the entire mechanism, everything about it. I mean, and these are, they're documented cases. They can have, you know, their eyesight can be completely different. One personality can need glasses and the other not. I mean, the ramifications of this alone and the studies with this, I mean, it's just like, that's one body. Regardless if they're splitting into different personalities, that's one body that's capable of switching on and off whatever it wants to. And so the implications of that to me are just mind-blowingly exciting.
This is, I gotta chime in. I'm sorry, Bryce. I can't help myself. No. This is fascinating. And in part, you know, I see the, how there's parallels to our quadruple aim here. And to remind everybody, obviously everyone knows I'm a big fan of our quadruple aim: patient experience, quality care, lower cost, provider wellness. You know, I see opportunity on many levels with this kind of work that you're doing, Tina. I mean, it's just amazing. Like I think I would have been game for it when I was struggling with burnout, you know,
and actually wouldn't we all, child, wouldn't you wanted to address the limiting programming that was installed as a child, instead of like, okay, 20 years later, now I've got these, you know, these ways that I'm reacting and behaving that, you know, I wish I didn't have. I mean, if we hit this as children, then we wouldn't be dealing with it now. Yeah.
I wish it was only 20 years. It was more like 35, you know, 35 years. And I didn't connect the dots till recently. I'm like, oh my God, it all makes sense. Oh, anyways. Yeah. This is beautiful. Sorry. Back to you, Bryce. Sometimes I can't help myself.
No, that's good. I love the conversation. I that's what I wanted to say, Todd, was that, you know, like of the quadruple aim, obviously, I mean, I think everything you're doing is really important, but you know, I kind of hang out in that provider wellness space, right? And because when you were talking, Tina, if, you know, I struggle with this idea that us physicians and healthcare providers in general are trying to heal from a very empty cup. You know what I mean? And all of these, most of us are struggling with anxiety, your depression, substance abuse. Most of us are struggling with medical conditions like diabetes and high blood pressure, even though we're the healthcare workers, we're the healers, you know, because of the limiting beliefs, because of what's happened to us in our lives and stuff. And so I think it's a really interesting point that if we can get, you know, the medical community on board in terms of for themselves, right? Imagine what they can actually then relate to their
patient. When you see the potential with yourself, I mean, from there, that's, for me, that's what I started working on. And I saw effects on me after working with the subconscious for a couple of months in the summer that I hadn't seen, my whole life. And I was like, okay, now we're on to something. So when you see that in yourself, then it's like, okay, now I can kind of glimpse, if you're that kind of a mind, I can glimpse what's possible for my patients, for my clients, and so on. Because, and let me just give, a tiny bit of background into, how programming works. Well, we're born into this world with a certain amount of, physiological programming that's set up, with our bodies. And then between the ages of 0 and 11, the subconscious is actually, I compare it to like a computer. I mean, it's very much like a computer. And so it's getting its first real programming as far as belief systems and all of that between the ages of 0 and 11. And that's when the child is deciding, this means this, I'm this, people are this, women are this, men are this, the world's this, whatever. And it's usually being taken in. It doesn't have to necessarily have to do with a good or bad upbringing. It's being, they're just taking in what authority figures are throwing out, peer groups, or, whatever is being repeated in their environment. And then that is set in, and now you're programmed. That's it. 0 to 11. You are programmed. And now, because most people don't understand that this is like any piece of technology, it can and should be upgraded on a regular basis, they go through the rest of their life on like DOS 0.2, because they've got this programming, and now they're just dealing with the ramifications of it or the positive benefits, whatever it is. But that programming and whatever the belief system is now dictates your emotions, your behavior, your results. Of course, your thoughts are in there. All of it is inside of that. And usually as you age, and Todd, as you kind of mentioned, I mean, it can compound. And so because the association, the subconscious, is an association making mechanism, once it's created the association, this means this. And it could be irrational, because it's not irrational. The conscious mind is rational and logical. The subconscious is not. So people are like, I don't know why I have this, this phobia of flying. And, phobias is a special to me, for me, because it's super easy, usually between 1 and 3 sessions. It doesn't matter how severe. But it's just purely association based. At some point in time, the subconscious decided planes are dangerous, elevators are dangerous, like whatever it is, snakes are. And once then, it's going to look for that association wherever it can, and it's going to compound on that. But the beauty is, you can reprogram the subconscious. You can break the associations, you can pull out the limiting beliefs, the limiting programming, but it really needs to be done thoroughly. So the work that I do, I mean, we're pulling out the limiting programming from every level, the conscious, the subconscious, the neurological levels, the nervous system, the DNA, the RNA, the cellular memory, every level that we can think of, and then saying anywhere else, subconscious, go after it. Let's pull that out. Let's unravel that. Let's get rid of it. And then you can choose what you want in there. And so people notice, immediate results after each session, and I'm having them actually look for the results and write them down, so that A, they're building evidence for themselves. When people see evidence, then they know what's possible and the momentum kicks in. And B, for me, as a clinician, then I'm documenting that evidence at the beginning of each next session and saying, okay, after that session, they had this result, and it's mind blowing. But that gives me the idea. Then I've got probably a 95% success rate between 1 and 6 sessions for almost anything that I threw out there. And that's a real thing. But that's kind of a little bit of the background of how that programming gets instilled. But the mistake being, A, people don't know that it's upgradable and reprogrammable like any piece of technology. And B, there's not a whole lot of good tool sets that are doing this right now, which is why I kind of removed myself from a marketing standpoint. Todd, you put the subconscious biohacker, I put myself there instead of linking myself to hypnotherapy or any of those, because the techniques can be, can be maybe not quite as, successful. So
this is so cool. And it so explains why I've told more than one administrator to fuck off in my career. sorry, I couldn't help myself. I'm like, this just seems like I got to say this. I think back to when I was a youth, I was bullied pretty relentlessly for a couple years. And when I go back and look at this and think about my defense and response mechanisms as I grew up, it totally goes back to that.
Absolutely. Especially when you add in traumatic events. Traumatic events are one of the biggest ways that the mind instills programming. And it's also the most common way that programming is reinstilled at a later point in life after that 0 to 11. New programming can come in by default just because of trauma. So trauma is one of the biggest ways that can hit all age groups. And so having that, yes, it definitely programs the subconscious based on that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bryce.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think, and let me just draw the analogy to medicine, you know, because that's just the world I live in. But like, you know, they always say like half what you learn in medical school isn't actually going to like come to fruition in practice. And that's so true, right? Like, I mean, we don't do open, you know, we don't take out people's gallbladders. If we need to, you do an open technique where you slice them open, give them a big old scar, but we're doing it laparoscopically now, right? So like, why would we not, you know, why would we just kind of say, well, it was always done open, now we're just going to keep going this way. You know what I mean? It's just, that's
right. Really, and you saying that open technique, I don't know if you're familiar, and I can't remember the study right now. Again, this holographic universe is pretty good with listing the studies. Yeah, are you familiar with the, is a particular knee surgery that they've done studies with? And so they did studies with, you know what I'm talking about.
I know. Right? At least I think I know where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. But this again shows what's possible. So especially when people believe it. So is, you know, people, there's a group, you know, you've got the group that does the surgery. You've got the group that doesn't do the surgery, but they've got an incision in the same spot, right? And so they believe they've had the surgery. And the results of the people who didn't have the surgery actually outweighed the results of the people who had the surgery, which means all it's needed is the body to believe that it's like healing it, and it knows how to implement those things without you actually getting in there and cutting the stuff up. I mean, what are the implications of this? I mean, like, how exciting is this? I mean, these are already documented studies, and I'm like, how can we document this and then not do anything with it? And instead it's just oh, that's super cool. And I'm like, anyway. Okay, now what? I'm like, you know, that's possible. So like, well, it takes placebo to a whole other level.
I was just going to say, this speaks to the placebo effect, right? I mean, why absolutely do we get results when you're getting a sugar pill, right? Because the mind is totally.
And it's directing the body what you want it to do. And that's it.
Right.
So why not go to the mind-body connection first is my question. Why aren't we just directing the mind what to tell the body to do instead of coming at it from the outside in and cutting everything up and doing all of that? Yeah.
Tina, you're talking about challenging the status quo now. And I don't think there's anybody on this call that wants to challenge the status quo. Obviously, I'm joking.
I sense a tiny bit of sarcasm.
A bit of sarcasm in there. Well, why don't we do a ripple challenge question here? And I don't know if Bryce is armed with one. If he is, I will defer to him. And if not, I've got one in mind. Do you have anything you want to roll with here, Bryce, or do you want me to fire away?
Fire away, Todd.
All right. So ripple challenge questions. These are just intended to have fun, maybe laugh. Tina's traveled a lot. And so I was thinking, what would be an interesting question? So favorite city in the world, Bryce.
All right.
Bryce.
Favorite city in the world that I've been to is probably, and I know, Tina, you're going to relate to this because I lived there for a little bit, but San Diego, easily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Love San Diego. Yeah, I haven't traveled much outside the U.S., but I love the U.S.
It's a beautiful place. I moved there from Japan back in 2010 when I started. You know, I still have the number one hypnotherapy business in San Diego, though I do not live there anymore. And I'm rebranded, as you see, but I still have the top, you know, ranked hypnotherapy business there. San Diego's great. You know, I've lived in 10 countries, just a little fun fact about me, and I've been to 60 plus. And so people ask me my favorites. It always gets a little challenging. But favorite cities, I would think probably Hong Kong and Sydney.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Want to go to Sydney one day.
Yeah.
Sydney's here. Nice.
Don't want to
make
the flight, but yeah, I want to go.
Well, I mean, from the West Coast. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's
true that. Yeah. True that.
I'll chime in here. I'm a fan of London. I always like going to London.
I do want to go there
really?
Too.
It's just so sprawled, you know. It's just
It's kind of easy to get around with the tube, and
yeah,
I am an Arsenal fan, you know, and so it's nice to go see a soccer match. And my sister lived
football,
Yeah, true. All right, true. Yeah.
Let's not go a true global fan at all.
All right. I'll stop droning on. All right.
The rest of the world.
Bryce, back to you for some more questions. If you got maybe let's do one more good question here. And then maybe we'll transition into some thoughts. No, I was hoping you had a question. I can always come up with a question.
Or Tina, okay.
Do you want to ask me a question? We can switch this around completely.
You want me to ask you a question?
You can ask anybody a question.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Oh man.
You got to pick one. There's no hedging.
I'm gonna just default to home is always best.
I'm
one of those guys.
Where's Michigan?
Mid-Michigan.
That's where I graduated high school and university. So
we both are in Michigan.
Really? Yeah. Oh, you're both in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I lived in Berrien Springs, this tiny little town near St. Joseph and Niles.
Yeah.
I went to Andrews University, but yeah.
Diamonddale, Michigan. You know, when I was in the Navy, all of our vacations would be to wedding receptions and the songs that come up and, you know, Davies in the Navy and all that jazz. No,
I grew up with a whole military family, so joined the Navy out of high school,
all your vacations are back home, you know, and so when you live there, your vacations are to something new and different, and I think that's probably where a lot of that stems from. But what about you, Tina? Where would you go?
I've never really, I'm a consummate nomad. I mean, people call me nomad. That's kind of my nomenclature. But you know, I never really had something to answer. I would never like to live in the same place twice. I feel like life's an adventure. You should see and do and explore as much as possible. But I will say, I mean, I have residency right now in Mexico. I've got a place in Baja. And but I've been in Ireland in Killarney off and on when I'm not traveling for business. I've been setting up business in Europe and the Middle East recently in Killarney. And I just realized, you know, that I really love it here and I'm working on residency. I've applied for residency and so I'll have to leave here shortly while that application, you know, goes through. But I'm 30 seconds walk from the national park. And so I go 2 to 3 hours and I, you know, just really connect. And I feel like that really balances me. I can walk into the little cobblestone streets in town in like 8 minutes and there's live music in the pubs every night. And yeah, and there's horses with horse-drawn carriages. I mean, it's quintessential Ireland. And the people are super friendly. And yeah, so I think I'm going to make this at least my European home base because it's closer to Dubai and Saudi Arabia where I'm starting a new business in both. And so I've been in and out of there. So it's much easier than the West Coast of the US.
What about you, Bryce?
Mine's easy. This is my goal in like a year, year and a half. I'm going to live in South Florida. I want to live in Tampa Bay and I'm fine with staying in one place. Despite my fair complexion, I love the heat. I love the sun. I love the warm weather. I love to golf. And there's just something magical about Florida. Ever since when I first went there when I was a kid, I always said, I'm going to live here someday. So I'm going to do it.
Though San Diego, I would challenge San Diego for that. But yeah.
The humidity, though, I love humidity. I love humid weather. Yeah, and San Diego just doesn't quite have that. So
no, it's the perfect climate. Florida. That's why it's like the perfect balance. You look Irish, though, with your complexion and your hair.
Yes,
you
that's Irish exactly it. Yep, I know. So I got to be careful. But yeah, South Florida all day.
Oh, this is so much fun. And I think it speaks to, you know, the opportunity of having conversations and considering different things in healthcare and asking the question, you know, why or why not, right? Like, why can't we think about using some of Tina's work on a larger scale, right? I mean, look into it, think about it, consider it. You know, there's always opportunities for pilots around, you know, the country, depending on the space that you're in. And I don't know what CFO wouldn't be happy with a reduced cost of admissions or decreased length of stay and better outcomes and all those kinds of things. It's brilliant. Something to consider for sure. But we're kind of approaching our 30-minute time frame here, which I'm always trying to be cognizant of. So why don't I give each of you maybe 30 seconds of one final thought and piggybacked on that, any plugs that you want to pass along for the work that you're doing, et cetera. And then after you both do that, I'll give my final thoughts and say thanks to everybody for listening in.
Sweet. Tina, you can go ahead and go first.
Yeah, sure. So just, you know, one last thing to leave with people in, you know, and I will put, you know, I'm starting business around the world. I've been fortunate to work with pro athletes, NFL Hall of Famers, multimillionaires, and even billionaires at this point. And the reason is because this is that successful, you know, and the life changes are that possible and that fast, because this tool that we have inside our heads is that powerful and more than we can even imagine. We're pretty much limited by our imagination of what it can do at this point. And so I would encourage anybody listening to really kind of, you know, look at your lives with a little bit more awareness. And, you know, like, you know, Todd was saying, you know, why am I reacting these way in these situations? Where do you think that's coming from? And, you know, there is something I can do about it. You know, there's something I can do about it. I don't have to live this way. You know, maybe addressing medical issues from the subconscious along with your medical professional. It's a great combination. I have lots of medical professionals that refer to me. And so just, I would encourage you to see and think about the potential that's there for you. And if you want to find out a little bit more about me, subconsciousbiohacker.com, that shows that, biohackyourmind.com. It's got some great audio programs if you want to, you know, really upgrade your subconscious even with audio. And then I've got a new little special if you want to actually get a taste and introduce yourself to your subconscious in a way that you can connect with and start to create a relationship with and get answers from. Really powerful, nice little special, transformation.biohackyourmind.com. Transformation.biohackyourmind.com.
This is awesome. And that'll all be in the notes. So yeah, you didn't have to memorize all that. It'll be in the notes.
I'm Bryce. Reading the chat.
That's right. Bryce, your turn, buddy.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off that. So, you know, I work in the physician wellness world, the physician burnout world, and the somewhat unspoken epidemic of the physician mental health crisis that's going on right now. And so I 1000% agree. I think everything starts with the mind and then manifests in the body. And there's just such a huge connection there. And, you know, I see it every day, and I treat it every day in my patients, but I also see it in my colleagues. And so I really encourage everybody to, you know, like do what you need to do to kind of take care of yourself, and get yourself into the best headspace you can. And that means, you know, breaking down some walls and some barriers. And so even if that, you know, if that means that you want to work with Tina and do that sort of thing, I think that's amazing. You know, I think that's a really great idea, because, you know, it's time to start, you know, looking at our mental health and exploring new options than kind of what's been drummed and drilled into our minds as the only way to do it. So, and that's, you know, that's kind of where I head into the, like I said, the wellness space. My blog is badgeofburnout.substack.com. My podcast is called Badge of Burnout, the podcast, where I talk about burnout and why we need to stop wearing it as a badge of honor. So I'm all in that space. I love talking about it. So tune in, and thanks for having me, Todd. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And before you take over, I just wanted to comment on Bryce. I mean, just such two just really important things. You know, attaching things as an identity to ourselves is very, very risky, especially when it puts us in the way that I'm a victim, I'm a burnout, and these type of things, because then, you know, everything, your programming will come from that place. And so he's spot on with that. And, you know, an actionable thing to do, even, you know, before you start upgrading, is balance. Balance is so, so important in your everyday life. I mean, you know, we can't state this enough. The burnout is coming from lack of balance. And, you know, the amount of anxiety clients that I now see compared to what I saw 10, 15, you know, 20 years ago is drastic. And that comes from lack of balance. And so I'm out in this national park, you know, 2-3 hours a day, because it's that important. If I'm not doing that, I'm not as good for my clients. I'm not as good for myself. I'm not mentally, emotionally, or physically healthy. And you need that to sustain. Everything else is not sustainable. We can push ourselves to the limits that people are doing. It is not sustainable. And there's a real, real cost on the back end with real disease. So love balance, that. Balance, yeah. Y'all.
I, this is, I love doing this. I'm not gonna lie. This is so much fun.
Can we all meet again? I totally want
to
do this.
Every episode, I'm like, all right, we're gonna have to have a number two and possibly a number three. It's so much fun. Just the one thing for me, for the audience, I think everybody's aware of the book Ripple of Change. Obviously, I'm biased.
I bought it.
Everyone's joined the circle or what have you. Anyways, you can find that at ourquadrupleaim.com. And what positive ripple of change will you create today? Thanks for joining me. Wrong button. All right, there we go.